Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Carrie Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
Hey folks, it's Carrie Oberbrunner. Great to be with you today. I have with me a special guest, Brendan from the company called Sombra. And I just found Brendan online. I kind of Googled who's a who in the blockchain space and crypto, and I found him, and I'm like so honored that he's here today. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, and just this whole journey.
Sure, cool. Thanks for having me. Sombra is the first visual effects company, I guess, on blockchain. And so my background is a visual effects artist, primarily working at companies like The Mill, NPC, and other sort of large level, top tier kind of VFX companies, primarily doing commercial work and episodic television show stuff. With that, you know, we have worked, you know, all over the world. And, you know, I ended up starting my own company called Bonfire Visual Effects, which runs out of Manhattan. And so we're, you know, about a 20-person team that mm-hmm. has been doing, you know, visual effects for a long time. And, you know, I have a couple partners. And so with the blockchain world kind of evolving and watching it over the years and, you know, NFTs exploding in 2020 and crypto kind of having, you know, its rise again in 2020, sort of in, you know, that period up to, I guess, the fallback. There was a lot of, you know, conversation within, you know, my personal friend group as well as just professional about sort of what that meant for, you know, the artistic world. Mm. And I think it was such early days, you know, that it was more people were buying NFTs that were strictly art-based, you know, more so because that was really all that was available at the time since it was sort of evolving. And people were obviously seeing large sales and interested in that financial number. But beyond that, I think they were also intrigued by what it meant. And there was obviously those people that said it was bullshit and, you know, total, you know, speculation and it didn't mean anything. But, you know, I think that's sort of indicative of what, you know, you see a lot with crypto related things. It's sort of like, you know, what you don't understand, you're fearful of. So I think that with a lot of those people, you know, there's that underlying technology that really does have a great base value that people kind of miss because they see this level of kind of stigma behind it for whatever reason. There are various, but I think that they really didn't see that concept of NFTs, you know, not everybody, some people did, but, you know, a lot of people didn't. And so really laid low a little bit within my world professionally, I think, until kind of now. But we saw that then, and we wanted to sort of do some litmus tests with visual effects in the space of NFTs. And so Sombra was born, and, you know, we also dabbled in the, you know, blockchain solidity coding process as well. You know, so we have our own cryptocurrency as well, which runs, you know, on Binance Smart Chain, and soon we're in about a few weeks, we'll be on Polygon as well. You know, for us, it was just sort of a natural transition to take the skill sets we already had and transition them into blockchain and do that, you know, on a new front. And obviously it required learning new things and hiring new people. And all that's been extremely time consuming and a little stressful, but really rewarding and also very fun. But, you know, the world moves faster here, I think, than anywhere else I've ever seen. And for me, that's great. That's what I love. You know, my whole pace is that. And I think that's my, you know, mind works that way, being very ADHD from birth, but finding ways to hone in on that, you know, perceived weakness turned forte, I suppose. But, you know, the world is still evolving here in blockchain and NFTs. And I think that we just want to kind of ride that wave and you know, add whatever we can to that technological progression, you know, and also to just get brands and people interested in crypto. You know, we work with a lot of brands specifically doing a lot of advertising work, you know, whether it's, you know, Nike or Adidas or, you know, smaller level brands like, you know, pharmaceutical companies, perhaps like Pfizer, you know, we do a lot of work for them or, you know, Puma or, you know, I mean, you can look at our website. We have a lot of different companies, you know, Best Buy also. There's just a lot of different brands there. And like, you know, they run the spectrum of interest also in the NFT world. Some people are really interested, some people aren't. And I think that it's it's good for us to be able to, you know, talk to those brands also, not only, you know, from like a fanboy perspective, but also from somebody that's professionally doing it. So we also have brands, you know, that are now interested in talking to us. So that can also become a revenue stream and a business possibility for us. But, you know, I think more than anything, we're just excited to see people getting involved in it. You know, new drops from new companies happen every day. We're also responsible for all the NFL NFTs. So NFL and Ticketmaster have been doing a lot of NFTs that you maybe have seen that run on Polygon. They're also doing a bunch now for the playoffs and then also Super Bowl. So we'll be
releasing those.
But they're you know, a lot of different companies are sort of jumping into that space, and it's interesting to see, you know, how they're doing it. So
all
we
right,
just kind of want to be part of it.
I'm going to ask you questions because you got me totally fascinated now. I just spoke with somebody close to me yesterday who, exactly what you're saying, fearful. Oh my gosh, the world's going so fast. How can I keep up? It creates anxiety. So I like what you're saying, that there's kind of two camps. One is, hey, it's changing so fast, let's just pretend it's not happening. The other one is to kind of wade into the space. And I hear you saying that you took your capabilities, your digital effects specialty, and you basically said, now how can we reinvent or at least integrate into the blockchain world? Do you have any tips for people who are listening who might be in that second camp, that they're like, something's here, I want to go in? Any tips kind of looking back that you would say to the person who's established and thinking of integrating somehow?
Yeah. Careful.
Be careful.
Think it through. I mean, there are a lot of ways to get involved, I guess, is another thing to say. Like, you know, you don't have to like look at mine or, you know, the next person's personal situation and say, oh, let's do that. You know, because like what we did was, you know, obviously we have a community that's based around, you know, multiple crypto tokens, and as well, you know, that correlate into our, you know, now NFT marketplace and, you know, larger picture. And it's been an ongoing thing for close to a year, but I guess, like, you know, just jump in first and foremost, like just do like go get MetaMask, you know, just sort of start reading as much as you can about the world and
Web3 and this.
Yeah. But also just like get into Telegrams and to Discords and sort of start to like interact with some of the people that are involved in the world, sort of like, you know, kind of start to experience it, I guess. Like I would spend maybe a month, realistically, unless there's like a reason that you need to go quicker, like just kind of like taking it all in, like making sure you're reading a lot of articles, making sure that you're following the actual cryptocurrency market itself, you know, reading not just articles about NFTs, but reading about, you know, what trends are happening in the technical side, like what's happening with, you know, different governments and how they're dealing with cryptocurrencies at that specific time. You know, China's the flavor of the week. It depends what's going on. They pick a different stance every other day. So, you know, then you've got, you know, SEC rules, you've got, you know, the, you know, infrastructure, you know, tax bills that are also creating inflation in the United States that then also then correlate to like what they're making decisions on with, you know, cryptocurrencies and things like that. So it's important to kind of like think it all through, because it's a huge picture globally, not just within the NFTs, but also within, you know, crypto. And then also what's happening, you know, within blockchain is a bigger thing too, because there's projects on blockchain that aren't even related to some of those aspects that kind of, you know, perhaps are supply chain oriented, or, you know, there are other things. So it's just like, read as much as you can. You know, kind of come up with a goal that you're interested in, I think, and then just sort of just like jump in, you know.
I like what you're saying though. Like you're saying, you can't control it. Don't, you know, it's not like Web 2 where you kind of had a handle. This thing's going so fast. I mean, in Wyoming, they bought what, 40 acres called CityDAO. There's something every day. Do you have certain channels or influencers that you kind of follow that you'd recommend?
Oh God, that's a hard one, man. Like the influencer stage is like so tricky because
agendas.
A lot of them. Yeah. There's such a conflict of interest, I think, with a lot of influencers. Like, you know, I don't tend to recommend influencers necessarily, because it's like, you have to take everything with a grain of salt. Yeah. Like, you know, anybody that says this isn't financial advice prior to the statement, I think, is a little, isn't that they're bad by any means. Like they could be awesome and totally cool people and like giving great advice, but you just have to always take it with a grain of salt, because like you said, it's uncontrollable. And it's like, even the people and things that they're talking about, like, you know, they can't control what that project does. So it's like,
48 hours later, something could be.
Yeah, or even not, you know, let's just say, you know, like an influencer suggests that you check something out that they personally genuinely like and they're interested in, or maybe they're invested in. And then, like, you know, you go and do it. And like, even if it, like, you know, titters out over like 6 months and then it doesn't pan out, like, you know, it's you can't get mad because that's just the way it is. But at the same time, it's just, like I said, take it with a grain of salt. Not everything that people are saying or, like, you know, the word of God, the experience level necessary to jump into being able to speak towards some of the things involved aren't always as, like, audited, I guess is a good way to say it, as some of the other things that people have to talk about. So it's like, you know, when you're talking about crypto projects, I think, you know, there's also a level of entertainment that goes with some of those types of things. And that also is a little bit counterintuitive to, like, you know, the learning process per se, because there is agendas there. So you can definitely read up on influencers. You know, I like BitBoy because obviously he's one of the bigger ones and, like, it's fun to watch. But, you know, I think in general, like, I would not necessarily go there for your information. I would go towards, like, you know, actual articles, you know, that are written by, like, you know, established places. And even there, you have to be kind of careful because, like, Yahoo Finance places can have sponsored articles. So it's super important that you kind of do your due diligence and that you, you know, are, you know, you're reading, like, you know, New York Times, and then you're reading, like, you know, more granular things, perhaps, like, you know, Cointelegraph or, like, you know, Coin Bureau, and, like, you know, just make sure you're checking whether it's a sponsored ad or not, just to kind of see, like, you know, is it an op-ed or is it, you know, a paid thing? Because that's super important to just kind of, like, form your own opinions. But, you know, again, it's just learning as much as possible and then picking a goal and then just kind of jumping in and seeing what happens. Like, you're never going to be able to really, like, totally control it. Communities are totally wild and, like, you know, they do their own thing. You just have to sort of, like, yeah, kind of just go with it too. You can't get mad.
I like what you're saying. It is almost like a wave where you're kind of grabbing the next wave and surfing it.
Well, you are. Because not just that, because, like, as the NFTs and crypto markets go up and down, so does your kind of your project. Like, the interest level will wax and wane. You know, when the market's red hot with buyers, and that's kind of a bad way to say it, when it's green hot with buyers, your project will have tons of influx of users. Like, you'll have tons of people in the Telegram and in the Discord. You know, it'll be really a trending thing. But, you know, obviously, if the market's down, people are a little bit, like, depressed. Like, it's just a psychological mentality that has nothing to do with you. It's just the way people kind of react to these things. They, like, pull back a little bit, you know, and kind of tend to, you know, retract, I think, from not just crypto projects, but general life in as a whole, you know, because, like, they've got a lot invested personally in the market. Like, you know, their future to some extent, there's this level of hopium that they have, which is potentially great because it could pan out, but that is there and it does affect emotions quite heavily. And so people
tell me that hopium. I'm a word guy. I've never heard that. I mean, I get it.
Opium?
Yeah. Talk to me.
Well, I mean,
I get it.
Opium, you're smoking opium, you're getting high as fuck. So, you know, when you're on hopium, it's just like, you know, you're high on hope. Like, you're just, it's an unrealistic perception sometimes, I think, at its core, as a metaphor, saying that, like, you know, people are hoping for things that are just sort of like a dream that you can only see when you're stoned on opium or something. But, you know, at the same time, that's the beauty of crypto, is that, like, it's not unattainable. Like, it truly could happen in cryptocurrency, which is what makes it so amazing. That won't be true forever once that bubble bursts. But I think the point is that, you know.
But you're saying you could launch something and literally in 48 hours, you're a millionaire. I mean,
it can totally happen. For sure it can happen. I've seen it happen multiple times. But it's just, you know, that I don't really try to operate that way because it's not really about that for me. But I think it's more saying, like, you know, it is possible, which is what makes it so cool and amazing and also exciting. But you can also go down,
you're saying. You can be investing for 6 months in some kind of big launch. Yeah.
They always say don't invest more than you can afford to lose from an investor's perspective. And when you're buying NFTs, that's true too. Like, anything that involves your personal finances, like, you really should be careful about and be like, only you know, spending money that you can spend for fun or things that you're not worried about. But of course, that doesn't always happen. But, you know, at the same time, like I said, there's a lot of people that either overextend themselves, or even if they don't, they have that constant emotional attachment to the whole world. And so when the whole crypto market's down, you know, they're kind of, like, you know, more retracted. They're putting on Netflix, hanging out at their house. Like, you know, they don't even go into Telegram. you know, it's not so much that they don't want to be on your project. And that also is something that you have to learn as a project owner, that, like, you know, a lot of the psychological things that come and go as waves, I guess, you know, with the crypto market and your consumers, you kind of have to not let it affect you, because it can also sort of psychologically affect you. And you can start to, like, kind of wonder, you know, what's going on. And, like, you know, a week later, things will be, like, you know, back on, you know, moon. But, like, that whole week, you can, like, start questioning whether or not
you're in the wrong business.
Yeah. And so it's just, well, I don't think we ever question that, but, you know, I think it's more like, you know, you wonder if, you know, there's, if like, you know, there's something that you need to do, like, you know, you start to have these, like, kind of panicked sentiments of needing to get something accomplished because, like, you know, there's just this lack of energy, but that's just the way it is. And I think that one thing you have to learn is to be patient and just kind of, like, take that actually as a positive thing and say, all right, this is my week off. I'm going to hang out and build something behind the scenes while people aren't bothering me, instead of worrying about it and saying, oh my God, what do I have to do now to fix it? It's just like, oh man, now's my time to, like, shine in between, you know, the waves of insanity. And so those things just are experience based, and some people are better at them than others. You know, I tended in the beginning to be very fixated on, like, you know, making sure everything's perfect, and, like, you just can't. And I quickly realized that and you know, moved away from that behavior. But, you know, if you tend to not learn quickly, then you can end up super stressed, and it's best to not, you know, go down that path. But
so
again, good. Just learn as much as you can, pick a goal, and then jump in, and, you know, just sort of try not to overextend yourself and take it too seriously. This is supposed to be fun as well. If you're a business, you know, I would hire some people. If you have, like, funds that you can actually invest in this, I would definitely, you know, seek out someone like myself, or, you know, another person that's, you know, established in the sense of being able to give you the right direction in terms of, like, the solidity developers you need to hire, because you need, you know, good solidity back-end developers. You need, you know, good back-end database developers. You need good front-end web developers that can help you integrate both of those things. Then you're going to also need, you know, depending on what you're doing, content developers to be able to put together graphic design informations. You know, potentially if you're doing some sort of NFT project and you don't have those resources, you're going to need to, you know, be able to find those resources to kind of, like, run that sort of division and that, you know, specific thing. And all those things can be complicated and expensive and pricey. And so it just depends on what your project is. And so finding those resources also is another thing. And, you know, we also collaborate with a bunch of other people too, like, you know, recruitment companies. And I think that those are, you know, other places too, depending on your budgets, that can be beneficial. You know, there are different ones that are good and bad. And it's just a matter of sort of defining exactly what you want to do and making sure that the plan you have in place, you know, is one that makes sense financially, and also, you know, is kind of taking into consideration the bigger picture, not just for your project, but also the crypto market and NFT market as a whole, because, you know, you do have to step back in this world and think through some of the things you do, because Solidity smart contracts are immutable, as we know. And so once you deploy those contracts, you can't really retrieve them back. Like, if you want to, you know, sort of, I guess, have a token that you've deployed, and then you say, oh, that contract has an issue. Like, you have to redeploy it. You can't use that anymore, but you can't go and fix it. It's just the way it is. And so I think that with that, you know, a lot of the infrastructure and things that people are building, they have to kind of think through the next, like, 5-6 years and really also make educated guesses and hypothesize what's going to happen next that's going to be really relevant, so that they can try to build that infrastructure into their plans and into their code. You can always try to find workarounds to keep things flexible, but at the same time, like, you know, you really do have to create a level of accessibility that's going to be there, you know, in 5, 6, 7 years, because if you don't, then, you know, you're going to get phased out by the next blockchain that comes out that's going to say, all right, we're the flavor of the week now, we have this and this, and you're like, oh man, now we have to, like, scramble to, like, so it's a constant evolution and a constant journey. And so that's the other thing too, is that, like, if you're not up for that, like, you know, constant sort of, like, level of excitement, like, you know, you're kind of always in Vegas at the casino, not that you're gambling per se, but there's always lights going off, there's always, like, you know, fancy people driving by, like, there's always something to look at. It's just like you're always engaging with something.
You're
always checking charts, you're always on calls, you're always, like, you know, sort of looking at something. And that's also indicative, I think, of millennial generation, which is infected now a lot of other generations because of how exciting the crypto world is. is.
Oh yeah. Hey man, I'm the Gen X guy who's learning all this. This is fascinating. So I brought you on, but you're really giving us super valuable psychology around this space. Now let's go into the NFL, the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, I know this will date the podcast the moment we talk about these things, but at the same point, how did you attract these big brands? Why are they saying we got to reinvent ourselves? Otherwise, we're going to be obsolete. And then maybe as much as you're allowed to proprietary, you know, share, like, how are they doing some use cases with Ticketmaster and these types of things?
Sure. I mean, so my visual effects company, you know, obviously we've had clients from before, and NFL was a previous client. So, you know, they had already been tapped into us from a, you know, visual effects perspective and doing high level work, deadline oriented things. You know, I think that they felt comfortable having conversations with us. And so, you know, we were initially approached, I think, kind of as like a preliminary sort of like, not even really, you know, yes and no kind of. It was more like, hey, like, we're thinking about doing this. You know, like, you know, we know that you can do the visuals. What do you think? Like, and then it turned into a larger conversation where, you know, I had already been doing, you know, Sombra. And so it was, we were able to sort of speak a lot more specifically to how we could do this and what it would look like and how. And so, you know, they left it in our hands to create them. You know, we conceptualized and directed and made them and sort of like gave them, obviously with a lot of their creative input and help, the ability to sort of, you know, create these really cool tickets, which, you know, you can check out. But for NFL, you know, I think I'm not sure that they actually looked at it in any way as reinventing themselves. I think that they looked at it as, you know, a test. They really looked at it as like, all right, look, like, you know, we're a multi-billion-dollar company and, you know, this is obviously a popular thing and, you know, we are curious about it because if, you know, we're going to be a successful company, obviously we should be. So they, you know, I think took it more so as like, you know, hey, let's try it out. And I think it went really well for them, which is sort of like, you know, where these next rounds are coming from. But, you know, you'll notice that there wasn't a lot of PR or marketing about it at all, really, if any, from their side when they first did the initial launch. And that was primarily, in my opinion, because they were sort of just trying to test the waters and see how it went. So you'll probably see a lot more stuff coming out now, especially over the next, you know, few weeks and months over, you know, what the new releases will be and things like that. But I think, you know, obviously because we're connected to these brands, it's an easy conversation for us to have and talk to. And, you know, if they're comfortable with us as a company, then we're obviously able to, you know, to some extent, give them a level of comfort when it comes to the blockchain and Web3 world. But for the companies that are thinking about, like, you know, reinventing themselves, I think it's a bit tricky. You know, I don't know that I would ever put all my eggs in one basket, you know, to reinvent myself based on anything. And I think that if you're reinventing yourself completely through Web3, like, it is a little bit dangerous. You know, you don't know where it's going. And so, like, you could pick the wrong thing. In the perspective of visual effects, it's sort of like, if you're familiar with stereoscopic 3D films, like, you know, where you put on the glasses and you go to the movies and they're 3D, you know, like, that was cool for a while, right? But have you really seen that much that recently?
I see what you're
saying.
So,
like, that was like a fad that kind of went up and kind of came down. And so, like, from a technical perspective, people were like, that was really cool. Like, you know, but I personally hated it. And I think a lot of other people didn't like it. And I think that, you know, it was a thing where people were like, it's going to be the future of filmmaking. Yeah. Like, this is like, you know, 3D glasses. And we're all like, some people invested millions of dollars in building out technical infrastructures for that pipeline. And then within a year and a half, it was completely obsolete because nobody cared. And so, you know, you have to be careful because, like, when you're in blockchain and Web3, if you're reinventing yourself as a company, you know, you can't necessarily, like, say, oh, we're going to invest all the revenue or, you know, whatever it is that you have in your budget for the annual, like, for this one thing, and then, you know, it falls flat, you're kind of screwed. I mean, you can, and maybe you'll get lucky, but, you know, it's better to, like,
almost have these mini projects, do you think, where...
Yeah, or a division, you know, that's sort of testing those waters, like, you know, to say, like, you know, let's say we're an ad agency and you want to get into it. It's like, you know, allocate a few people to start building on that division and sort of start, you know, doing some things on blockchain, you know, talk about doing an NFT drop. Like I said, you know, it's, you don't want to, like, jump, like, off the mountain immediately, you know, before you know how to ski. Like, you know, you kind of want to, like, you know, test it a little bit and, like, get your bearings a little so that you're ready to kind of, like, go full throttle. So it's like, you know, do some NFT drops, like, you know, collaborate, you know, do a few things. And then after you've got that little baseline experience, you know, formulate your plan, get your team, and then you can do, you know, the bigger thing.
What do you think of the CEO who's wired to be visionary. What do you think about him or her being the one, you know, not to take the whole company, but just basically the team almost says, okay, CEO, you can play in the sandbox over here with X amount of resources and vision, but the other 90%, we're going to do our main thing that's predictable. Do you think, have you seen that work with kind of a CEO who's wired that way?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't, I'm not sure that I've seen people actually do that.
For instance, let's throw out Michael Saylor or Gary Vee or Mark Cuban. I guess, you know, these people, they have their main thing, but then are they kind of experimenting around the edges? I don't know.
Well, I think, yeah, for sure they are kind of, but I also think that, like, you know, part of the crypto world, which is sort of what I was saying before, I think about the entertainment aspect, is that, like, you know, there's sort of a level of security with those guys, I think, when they're getting involved in it, because they have such a brand name established with them and they have like a fan base, they have access to huge marketing like abilities. They reach so many millions of people that, like, that literally in and of itself is like one of the biggest exposure points for becoming popular in the NFT and crypto market space. So it's like
you already have the platform.
Yeah, it's not really like, I mean, obviously, maybe, but I don't think it's really a high level risk for those guys, because it's like, you know, Gary Vee can draw, you know, hand drawn pictures of animals, and, you know, now they're selling for $400,000. And, you know, who's to say that that's ridiculous or not? Like, I'm not that person. I'm not going to say that that's ridiculous, because, you know, it's, in a sense, it's kind of cool. But the point is that, like, it was so fast for these guys, you know, from the onset, I think, and the interest level for that was because of, like, you know, who they were as human beings in terms of, like, you know, their Twitter accounts, their, you know, notoriety on television programming, you know, their established, you know, businesses that people are aware of. So that's not a risk level, you know. Okay. It's sort of like, you know, a celebrity promoting like a brand, like they're going to get paid, you know, it's just what it is.
Okay, cool. Maybe just 5 minutes more. Do you see any big influencers, bands, et cetera, that have kind of flopped? Maybe they've put, and I'm not saying you got to name them, but you've seen perhaps people say, hey man, we're going to hop on the NFT thing or the blockchain thing, and then it didn't go well. Or do you kind of only see the people who hit the home run?
Well, I mean, I've never seen a brand that's established or a celebrity do an NFT drop that wasn't successful, to be honest. I haven't. Yeah. But I've seen a lot of people do unsuccessful NFT drops left and right. You know, I mean, a lot of artists have a lot of problems gaining traction within the NFT world, which is another thing that, like, we do try to help people with. But it's hard because, like, without a following, like I said, people aren't necessarily interested in it, because at the core of NFTs is resale. People want to be able to resell NFTs. Like, they may love the artwork, but at the same time, they're buying an asset. They're not buying a picture for their wall. It may end up there, but that's not what the core value of it is. And so people need to see that longevity and the ability to resell that asset. And if you as an artist don't have a following, you don't have, you know, that future that's going to give them that ability to resale, then you're creating something that's just not interesting. And so you have to kind of work on a different level, not only, like, you know, with your artwork, but also psychologically within your, like, ability to brand yourself and build a community around you if you really want to be successful. And there are people that will get lucky, obviously, with something they put up that's going to get, you know, like, popular, for sure. Don't get me wrong. But generally speaking, 90% of the time, if not more, I would say that you really have to kind of, like, create an actual, you know, methodology.
Value. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. To create a value proposition for them where they are going to see you not only as, like, a cool entity that they want to be a part of, but also they want their hands on your artwork because they know that it's going to be valuable and they can sell it.
Wow. So it's almost like the NFTs are an extension of your brand, almost like a stock option, where we've made people become essentially, the fans can become part owners.
Yeah, I mean, effectively what you're doing is you're selling a piece of your brand. You know, I mean, if you're a television show, you can sell, like, you know, NFT characters and things like that. And it's a great way also for people to sort of engage with your product. You know, it's like you can sell different figurines and things like that and all of these different things. But I think that, like, in the age of especially digital content, like television, gaming, and all of that stuff, like keeping people engaged in a way where they're like sort of fixated on the screen. Not say that that's necessarily like what I mean, but you know, keeping them in that world with like, you know, NFTs and all of that stuff, it's just a better way to keep that engagement going, build brand loyalty. You know, if you have a website that's sort of like, you know, got a lot of cool stuff on it, which I think is where that metaverse is headed. You know, each brand and different company is going to have their own little metaverse, and that's going to sort of be hosted, you know, via Web 2 within the Web 3 world. And, you know, each one will start to get interconnected. People will start buying each other out. We'll start to see different metaverses pop up. Obviously, AWS, Google, Epic, you know, those companies are going to be big players, you know, and we'll sort of see how it all unfolds. Meta, perhaps, but, you know, people are really hating on Meta right now on Facebook.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that's headed. But, you know, it's going to be exciting, you know, and people are going to kind of, you know, start to mesh and mold. And I think that that world of the bubble is going to sort of start to unfold where, you know, companies start buying other companies. You know, the money that people saw before starts to get, you know, polarized into specific places, you know, and it's not as like free flowing because, you know, people, like I said, need to see that utility, that value in what they're buying. And I think that, you know, in the beginning of like the gold rush, people don't look so hard at what's going on. They're just like, here's money. Like, and I'll be rich. Sure. Fine. But, you know, once that kind of pullback happens and people are like, wait, why am I not rich yet? Or they're like, why am I not super rich yet? Or whatever it is. They start to look more closely at what's going on. And then when they start to do that, they start to make smarter investments, and people that could have gotten money before no longer will because their project sucks or they're not doing what they need to do or their idea isn't really relevant or whatever it is. And so you start to see those people drop off, and that's when that bubble effect happens. And then you start to see things sort of level out that landscape. So I think that that's also something we're excited for too, because there's just too many people right now. Like, it's kind of annoying. It's like, there's so many, every other day, it's like my grandma is going to call me up and say, hey, I started a blockchain business. Can you help me? And I'll just be like, what, did you like fix the TV yet? She's like, I don't know how to do that, but she'll know how to do blockchain. So,
oh
you know.
My gosh.
Dude. Well, it's on your local news, man. It's like, I'm on like local TV and they're like, have you heard about the metaverse, guys? You really need to be thinking. It's like, they're talking to like, you know, my mom, and it's just it's just crazy.
This was amazing. Where are you out of?
So our company's out of Manhattan. My wife and I, we relocated to New Jersey, like the shores of New Jersey, you know, to sort of just like, you know, get out of the COVID madness. Yeah. And it's been much better. So we've also moved a lot of company into the cloud now. So we're still based out of Manhattan, but, you know, we also have company or employees rather all over the world really, because it's, you know, not really a matter of having to have a super physical location. So,
and when you mentioned that developers, you know, you mentioned all these titles, what is your role? Is your role like the visionary for the projects, or what's your title? I know it's tough to nail it down.
Yeah, I mean, when you're sort of a startup company, you're also wearing so many hats too. Yeah. So it's sort of a difficult thing to like completely identify. But I mean, yeah, at its core, I'm the CEO and like the founder. But really, like, I also play, you know, like daily producer, where, you know, I'm checking in on everybody, making sure that the tasks are getting done. You know, I'm also sort of like, you know, the business person right now, where I'm organizing some of the contracts and things, you know.
So good.
I'm also sort of like, you know, chatting with people like you and doing, you know, sort of more like, you know, marketing
business
and sort of like business. Yeah. Business development outreach, things like that.
Yeah.
And of course we have people that help, but, you know, I'm sort of doing like a lot of those different things. Right. And then I'm also doing a lot of Unreal Engine visual effects work personally as well. And we do a lot of motion capture work and we actually have a bunch of partners in the motion capture business. One of our partners here at Somber, like our partners of the actual project, developers, whatever. His name's Demian Gordon. He like was the creator, or not creator, but like the kind of fundamental method man and kind of implementation man and conceptualist behind the Matrix films visual effects.
Yeah.
A lot of other top level Hollywood films. And he's really a pioneer in motion capture and has helped a lot of companies really develop motion capture technology that's utilized in most feature films you see today. He most recently was working at DreamWorks as the head of their visual effects and virtual production department, but now he's sort of segued off into the indie game world for more lucrative and kind of more interesting opportunities, I think, that are also kind of metaverse related. But he's also a partner of Sombra. And, you know, through him and other people, you know, I've also sort of now been diving a lot into the motion capture world. And so a lot of our gaming and content and things that we do are, you know, based in Unreal Engine through motion capture.
Man, that's so good. And where can people find out about you, your company? How can I send people your way?
Yes, I mean, you can always check out the company in the marketplace at sombra.app. And
sombra.app.
Yeah, and then you can also check out the Telegram, which is Sombra Network. And yeah, you know, I'm also on LinkedIn, so you can friend me and sort of see what we're posting up each week. You know, we've got a good YouTube channel and all sorts of content that we put out there. And we got a great new thing going with Polygon, which we'll be talking more about, which is really exciting. So there's some interesting things to announce there as well.
All right. Well, we'll follow you for the Polygon announcement. Well, this was absolutely amazing. I'll press stop and then I'll give you just some goodness here. But thank you so much, Brendan, for being with us today.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.